session number 221353, rule 3.
Nelson Taylor, rule 3.
Yeah, this sergeant, I was taking six prisoners back, SS French, and he said this sergeant called to me to said he wanted one of the prisoners, and I said why, and he said I'm going to shoot him, and I refused to let him have him, and I said I've been ordered to take six back by the officer, and I take six back, and we got a little further out, and intelligence officer came up, and he pointed to the same man and said, I want him. I said, well, I gave him to him. He wanted him for questioning. And we got higher up Holland, and there's more units coming over airborne. And we had to do the attack on Sertogenbosch.
Before we go on to the attack on Sertogenbosch, can you explain why the sergeant wanted to shoot that French SS prisoner?
Well, because a friend of his had been shot the night before. Had been killed, the three of them together had been, not shot, they'd been mortared. Killed by mortar fire in the that was the way he felt. And the
did the French prisoner survive?
Yes, he was taken by an intelligence officer. A captain came up to me from brigade and said that he wanted him for questioning. Took the same man, well, why the same man out of six, I don't know, but they took him anyhow, and I got rid of the five. I don't mean I left them with the rear guard, and we went on to further up Holland. We had to do the attack on Sertogenbosch, and meanwhile they'd brought up Sherman tanks without turrets, and we were doing the initial attack. We would be carried forward in these Shermans with open tops, and about eight of us together in one Sherman, and we advanced to the outskirts of under fire, shell fire and mortar fire and everything. We advanced up to the outskirts of Sertogenbosch, and another unit took over from us, and we went back to the main road and marched up the main road again, which was being used by units to try and get through to Arnhem. And we were pushed off left again to hold that ground, left of the road, and then brought back again to Nijmegen. And we went over the bridge at Nijmegen and turned right and got to a place called Bemmel, and we held there on the banks of the river, Maas, and the Meanwhile, we'd had two Dakotas come down on their way back from Arnhem, crashed either side the road, and we had one load of Lancasters come over with Spitfires. This was some miles back from Nijmegen. We had these Lancasters come over with Spitfire escort, and they, Jerry was firing 88s at them, and they hit this one as they approached us. They hit this one, and just in front of us, five came out of the nose, five men bailed out. And less than 2,000 feet. Or may have been 2,000, seemed less. And they were down in a moment. They were on the ground. And the land came down and crashed and burnt out. And the Dutch women came running. Two to your crew, Dutch women in the long skirts and wearing clogs. And they got to the air crew to take care of them. And they, I'd say we pulled on from there. And we got up to Nijmegen and Bemmel. And we got into a brickworks. And just before that, we were on the banks of this dike in the building. There was a cattle pen on the banks, just next to this dike, which went up about 12 feet. And we were sleeping. We had a guard on. And he said that later in the morning, he said that some 6 to 8 heads had appeared along the top of the dike, looking down, and then disappeared. He didn't move. And of course, we were inside the building, and they didn't know we were there. And we moved from there to this brickworks, and next morning we found the on top of another dike, in plain view of us. The Germans, one was leaning out of a window with a rifle, and two others were burying the teller mines. And we had to move from the brickworks down to the river's edge to locate a German one-man's torpedo. And I believe that was two men torpedo. And because the War Office wanted it. And the we got down to another brickworks on our side of the river, and there were British troops the other side. And we went in the dark along the edge of the river, found this two-man torpedo. And Navy men came across the river to take this thing back. And we got fired on later when we moved out of the brickworks. We got fired on later from the other side, from the British side, by rifles or brains from the other side of the river. And I thought I fired on by our own men. They didn't know, they'd seen movement, and they didn't. It's a wide river, they didn't know we were, and semi-dark, and they didn't know. They took us for Germans, and they...
Where was this?
This is below the Nijmegen Bridge. And, let's see, we held position up there, and we were, at Nijmegen, and,
you were called back, you said?
Down Holland to the small village of Thorn. And we had to hold the river there. And we were shelled and mortared there, and we pulled out to Horn, a place called Horn, and where we had a forward position, alongside a large barn, and the Germans were dug in the side of a canal, 150 yards in front, and we got mortared and shelled, and I was on duty in the forward position dugout, and with another chap, and we, corporal brought this reinforcement up, and we'd had some come join the battalion, because we'd lost men, and we thought, excellent, it was dark. We got in the back of the dugout, stretched out, and they thought we'd, because we hadn't any sleep the night before, hardly. We'd had kept watch. The new lad kept watch. And I wasn't asleep, but I was, a light filled up the dugout, and you could only see the legs of the champion guard because of the roof. And I banged his leg. I said, what was that? And he lit up a cigarette. Standing up, he lit up a cigarette. And of course, when I banged his leg, he even offered the packet underneath to us. And he'd come from England. He'd had 2 weeks training. He'd been a cobbler in the army. And we found that a whole lot of the new lads, it wasn't their fault, had hardly had a few weeks training. It was 2 years of supposed to be infantry training, under fire and all that. And they were sending out men, boys. And we were losing them the next day. You didn't know the names even. And what at Thorn, we were overlooking this, we were in a building overlooking this canal at Thorn, and We were told that the officers might come at off by the officers, I mean, we were told by our officers that it had been reported by the Dutch that Germans had been coming across in rubber dinghies. So I got on this balcony with the brain and I prayed for them to try and cross the river in a rubber dinghy. Because I meant to sink it. And at any rate, we held there, and German patrols used to come down and we always kept quiet. We were always told keep quiet, and they'd come within yards and they never quite knew where we were. And we got to Venlo, across the river. And got pounded from Venlo by 88s, and Jerry pulled in. And they were obviously watching us from a tower in the town. And artillery turned up with a brain with a Bofa gun to pepper the tower. And we had some more reinforcements sent up, two men sent up to join us. And we were in this barn, and across the field was a small building where the cooks were making a meal for us. And we'd already been across and got ours, meal. And these two young lads turned up, so we sent them across with the mess tins to this house, and they just got it across, halfway across the field, and Jerry opened up with on the Bofa gun. Retaliation. Meanwhile, the Bofa gun had pulled out, and they shelled an empty field except for our two lads with the mess tins. And they'd already got their food in the mess tins, and they went down on the ground and lost the grub, and they turned up in the barn with the mess tins dripping. And we said, well, go across again, they've gone there. And they wouldn't go across. They wouldn't go across for their food. And we got down into Holland again, and into Belgium, I should say, and around outside on the Belgium Dutch border that hadn't been cleared, and we various towns in Belgium, and comes prior to Christmas, we were sent into
the Ardennes.
Yeah, we were sent to Waterloo. We got onto the battlefield of Waterloo, and then right by the memorial, the hotel. Don't think we were in to sleep on the floor. I mean, not beds. And then we were told we'd have Christmas dinner the next day, and reveille was 8:30, and we got called at 2:30 in the morning. Get your battle kit on. And we went down to cross over the river into down to Dinant. Cross over the bridge at Dinant. We got up on the hill. Had to dig in there. A foot of snow. And they said that Germans were breaking through. And we were up on this hill all night. And then we had to advance down to a small town of Marsh, and from there down to up into the forest of the Ardennes, and in the freezing cold, and it was, we were up there 10 days. Our boots on all the time, because if you removed your boots, you couldn't get back on. And we held this position, and I spotted a patrol, and the major said to open fire on them with a brand. I shot them, and they, one man got away. I got the rest, and he came back with a Panther tank, which I felt was a bit of naughty. And meanwhile, after I'd fired, the major had sent two of us the way this man had run. He sent two on all compass bearings. He sent two men each way on a compass bearing. And we went the way this man had run. So we got to a clearing, a large clearing in the woods. And just beyond some smaller trees, I'm talking about 15 foot high, just beyond there was a clearing through the woods. They call a fire damp, I think. A clearing right across the woods, open space. And then this smaller trees, and then the circle. And we were at the side of the circle, and under the Christmas tree, and snow all over the place, falling down on us. And this German comes along, decides to come into the circle. He got to the edge of the circle, and the trees at last stopped him. And he's winding the gun back to forwards to try and get a field of fire. And fires some 8 shells over the circle back to where the company was. So the two of us being forward, we were in a safe position, as you might say. And the he fires these shells, and all the time we're looking at them, I thought, well, we haven't got a thing to. They had back at company, but we hadn't got a thing to attack the tank with. And they finally pulled back and disappeared. But I think that he was the one survivor from the tank. I shot the other, and he was having his own back by bringing the Sherman back. And the funny thing was, I was sent out on patrol again the next night. We got up to the edge of the forest up on the hilltop. Open in front, open ground, snow, freezing cold. And nobody inside. And we had six or seven men from the 101st Airborne. They turned up with an officer. And they got grenades and Tommy guns and their divisional side, 101st Airborne, and the officer said that he's a lieutenant, as they say. He says, right, this is it, lads. He says, you take over their position. And this one big private, he turns around, he says, God damn it, Lieutenant, we're not staying out in the snow. We're going back to village. We want a house for the night. So we looked at each other, and the captain, the officer, lieutenant comes over to us. He says, sorry, fellas. He says, the guys don't want to stay out here. We'll have to leave you. And they went back and disappeared. And it's been in the back of my mind all the years, because there were German units with them who were wearing American uniforms. They were dropped by parachute at the Ardennes. And there were no other American units around in the area, just these six men in the American uniform. I'm wondering whether they were trying to get through, back through our lines to their own side, or whether they were genuine. But I mean, our company hadn't heard, when I got back to company, our company hadn't heard of any American unit around. So I don't know to this day whether, and apparently they could speak American, had lived in America a lot, and the Germans had, they got the American language or way of speaking. And we got, we were 10 days up there, freezing. And the food used to come up on a carrier, grain carrier, in a hot box. As soon as it was open, it was cold. You'd have a poached egg, like a piece of rubber. You could pick it up as a whole and eat it ice cold. You pick it up, everything was cold. The only thing that was warm was the hot, was the tea.